And I can't remember if it was Alaska or a different state, but they had some sort of voucher system, and someone was saying the state basically looked at it and said, well, Classical Conversations is only 20% Christian, so we can use your voucher up to 80% of your curriculum.
Oh, wow. Interesting. And,
well, first of all, we're 100% curriculum, 100% Christian curriculum. There ain't no 20% here. Yeah. But just that the state would identify it like that. So we've had an experience with these kind of state programs for a while. And when we've learned about them or found ourselves on some list, you know, we've asked to get removed from that.
Welcome to The Frontline with FPM, where we talk about California politics, homeschool freedom, parental rights, and the family. I'm your host, Nathan Pierce, and thanks for joining us today. Let's jump right in and see what's going on here on The Frontline.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Robert, for joining us. We have Robert Bortons from Classical Conversations joining us today for a discussion, and I'm looking forward to it so much. Robert is the CEO of Classical Conversations and also one of the first students. So thank you so much for joining us. So I was thinking maybe you could tell us a little bit about CC, and then I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, those things are pretty well intertwined. So Classical Conversations was started in our family's basement in 1997. So I was homeschooled through high school, and like a lot of families back in the, I guess at this time was in the 90s, you know, the questions were, how are you going to do these difficult subjects? You know, how are you going to get into college? You know, things like, you know, you can't really do speech and debate by yourself or with your mom or just your younger siblings. That could cause a lot of, you know, inter-family conflict that you don't want. And so we had been a part of other co-ops in the past and, you know, different homeschool sports and things like that. And so my mom decided to start Classical Conversations when I was a freshman and said, you know, how can we give our kids a great Christian classical education? She had just, you know, we hadn't really gotten one up to that point as far as a classical education was concerned. And yeah, so we brought together about 10 families that year. Some of them had younger siblings that the older ones just really enjoyed it. And so they wanted to do it a second year, and there's other ones coming up behind us that wanted to do it. And so had two groups that second year, and then grew to a waiting list of about 300 people with like five or six different groups, just helping people homeschool through high school. And then I have three younger brothers. I'm the oldest of four, but there's actually a 12 and 15 year gap between myself and the youngest ones. And okay. So my mom, you know, I always say that they had two more so they could do it right the second time. But, you know, doing all those things that you learned, she created the rest of the curriculum. So, yeah, it's just her and a bunch of homeschooling moms with a need that they saw and then an opportunity to serve their neighbors. And so I was able to, you know, go through that. I wasn't the best student all the time. I was like most young men, you know, more concerned about, you know, playing sports and getting my work done so I could go do what I wanted to do. But I was able to get a industrial engineering degree from Clemson University. And while I was there, my parents were building Classical Conversations. So people ask me, did I always plan on being a part of Classical Conversations? And the answer is really no, because my mom would actually call me in college and ask if they could borrow money from me. And I would tell her, that's not how this works. I'm supposed to be calling you for money. And so, yeah, by the time I graduated from college, there was about three or 4,000 students, I believe, in Classical Conversations. And I also wanted to prove that homeschooling worked. So if Classical Conversations didn't exist, I would 100% be homeschooling my own kids with some program or figuring it out on our own. So I was fully on board with that. But I also wanted to prove, you know, okay, I got into college. You know, could I really succeed in the workforce? And so I actually was able to work for a couple Fortune 50 companies and a small manufacturing company, and was climbing the ladder, getting, you know, promotions and raises and good reviews. So I felt like I could go tell other parents that, yes, you can homeschool, you can get into college, you can get a job, you can get married. Like, these things aren't, not available to you, that I could actually have a testimony beyond that. And so when I was in my late 20s, I got an opportunity to come back and help at Classical Conversations. And it's been, haven't looked back since.
Wow. Sounds like, it's you can't really separate your background from Classical Conversations' background. How it's different now than it was with one group of families. What is your role, and what does Classical Conversations do now?
Yeah, so, you know, of course we all learn things and grow and mature, and as an organization, as individuals. And so it was very much, you know, what to do on Monday and trying to get kids into college and things like that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, because that's what the homeschooling community really needed at that time. But now it's really kind of evolved and grown into, you know, trying to provide the next generation of Christian leaders for our country. And just a lot of it has always been on leadership development, but just really intentionally doing that. And it's not always just for the students, it's also for the parents. And so at Classical Conversations, we have kind of this triangle of trust and development, where we have, for those who don't know, Classical Conversations typically meets once a week with a trained parent tutor with the students, and for the younger students with the parents. So it's a student tutor parent paradigm, with all three supporting each other and growing as leaders, and then doing that in community, so you can have those conversations with other students, you know, with that peer group, and you know, explore, you know, history together or Latin. Do biology together, dissect a frog, do chemistry experiments, do things like mock trial and debate and public speaking that you can't really do easily on your own. And of course, there's other clubs out there, but it's all, our curriculum is designed to build a leader. So starting kind of our foundations program, that's our K through sixth grade, giving them, you know, the knowledge, you know, those key facts, so that they can have those easily come to mind in the future, and learn how to, in third through sixth grade, start writing well and communicating well through the written word, and then just teaching kids about choices and freedom and leadership, then through the books that we've picked and the curriculum that we've curated. And it lays it all out in our curriculum. In our catalog and in our website, you can see, starting in seventh grade, what are those key leadership themes that we're teaching through the curriculum.
Okay, so it's a whole K through 12 program, and you cover all the subjects, or all the subjects somebody needs in order to go through school?
Yeah, so all the subjects that you would need, it's not like a la carte. It's kind of like, it's a core classical curriculum with a Christian worldview throughout. So we don't necessarily have like a separate Bible study. We want the church to be involved in that, although do we have like memorizing verses and things like that. But we believe that, you know, math shows the glory of God, you know, music, science. So we believe everything points back to God. And so that's one of the differences at classical education, or classical Christian education, is we put God at the center of education instead of the student. So, you know, we're not a student-centric curriculum. We're a God-centric curriculum. And we want to help kids to, you know, look up into the sky and think about their creator, and not looking down so much on his creation. And so that's what we're trying to do with our curriculum.
That's the right perspective to have. It's kind of leads us into the conversation that I wanted to get into more, because that perspective, that worldview to have in education, is definitely under attack in our country. Certainly here in California, but across the country, familiar with that, and I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the challenges we have with people in the homeschool world looking at the funding that might come from the government. But even without that, there's challenges to the freedom that we have to teach from a biblical perspective, from a Christian worldview, from pointing our kids to God perspective. Is that something that has, well, how have you dealt with that with classical conversations?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And, you know, we've actually been dealing with this a lot longer than most people. And the first experience that we had with government purchasing curriculum was with the state of Alaska. And so you can imagine Alaska is a big state. There's not many students around. And so they've been trying to figure out how to educate students in a creative way from a statist worldview for a while. And so you can imagine, like, you might not have another family within 40 miles of you. So they've, you know, been buying curriculum on the behalf of families for a long time. And so, you know, we were, you know, maybe a decade ago, maybe even longer, you know, we got an email from one of our customers in Alaska about why some of the curriculum was missing. And, you know, we didn't really know anything about it at that time, but the state had been buying the curriculum and giving it basically to the families, or the families bought it through a state program, but the state couldn't fund anything that was religious. And so the state was working, would open up the materials and either black out the name of Jesus in Bible verses, or if it was something they could just remove from the curriculum, like we have timeline cards, they would remove those timeline cards. So, I mean, a way of looking at this is to save, the state would say this curriculum was $70. So a parent could save $70 just if they would deny Jesus' existence, right? Wow. Or was willing for the state to do that. And I can't remember if it was Alaska or a different state, but they had some sort of voucher system, and someone was saying the state basically looked at it and said, well, Classical Conversations is only 20% Christian, so we can use your voucher up to 80% of your curriculum.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Well, first of all, we're 100% curriculum, 100% Christian curriculum. There ain't no 20% here. Yeah. But just that the state would identify it like that. So we've had an experience with these kind of state programs for a while. And when we've learned about them or found ourselves on some list, you know, we've asked to get removed from that. And so obviously the proliferation of that since COVID, you know, has made that even more difficult, as I think now 15 states or maybe more have some sort of what they call school choice laws. Now, most of them have, you know, not included homeschoolers in them still, but, you know, more than a handful have. And so for us at Classical Conversations, you know, part of being a Christian, we believe, is to look to God to sustain us. And, you know, we're not perfect people by any means, but we can see that when the government has funded higher education, the cost has gone up and the quality has gone down. When the government took over healthcare, the quality went up, our quality went down, and the costs have gone up, right? We're in the middle of the government shutdown right now as we're recording this. Because why is it shut down? Because of the healthcare tax subsidies that go to the health insurance companies. So basically, they want a $30 billion bailout every single year for the health insurance companies, and you're mandated to buy their product. And the government controls every aspect of it. So we can see just by looking at, you know, other sectors that have had the government take over it, financing it in this way, that freedom has gone to near zero. The quality of the products are, you know, not as much as they were previously, and the costs have gone up astronomically, you know, so high. Yeah. You can't, the average person can't even afford them anymore. And so we don't want to see that done to Christian education, where people think the government is the great benefactor, that government is replacing God.
Yeah. It seems like that's kind of the default, that way of thinking that people in our society have been raised in the public school system for the most part, to be taught to think, you know, their thinking is that the government is the go-to provider. And if anything else ever doesn't work out, we can always go back there. And yet that's not how God intended it. Parents, they do a great job educating their kids, and they know their kids better. And so it just makes sense that, that our system that we have in our country is going down because it's a bad design. It's a flawed design, and the design is getting worse, not better, with all these fixes, so-called.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more C.S. Lewis says, and I'm paraphrasing, there's nothing more tyrannical than, someone with a good heart trying to do something for you with government money. And basically, what we've seen in Arkansas, for example, gives homeschoolers like $5,000. Now, the average homeschooler, if you look at like Neary or even like the Old Schoolhouse magazine, typically you'll see the average homeschooler spends anywhere between like $1,000 and $1,500 per year per student. And again, of course, you can spend zero, you can spend tens of thousands of dollars, right? There's all sorts of ways to do it, but that's not an average. Well, what they're seeing in Arkansas, and I'm just going to give some round numbers, is that they're spending about $3,000 on academics and then $2,000 on other things, such as, you could do it on kayaking lessons or karate or, all sorts of different things like that. First of all, the average bill is now doubled from, $1,500, say, to $3,000. And then they're spending these other $2,000 on other things. And so the Republican state legislators in Arkansas are saying, hey, we need to put more restrictions around what they can spend money on. I've seen in, Facebook groups in Florida where the parents are bragging how they got their living room remodeled at the expense of taxpayers. In Arizona, they have a way where you can get a $2,000 coffee machine and do a barista class for your kids on the tax, using the tax money. And so you can see homeschooling had almost zero, financial corruption in it. Like it was, near zero because the, people paying for it were paying for it with their own money. And the providers, for the most part, have been homeschooling parents like you and I, just trying to provide benefits, what we've learned through the years, back to the homeschooling community. But now you're going to have a thriving ecosystem of corruption because where government dollars go and you have unearned money, and the Bible is very clear about what unearned money does to your soul, that you're just going to bring this in. So it's going to bring in, significant regulations to the homeschoolers not taking the money, as well as the homeschoolers taking the money, as well as a number of kind of inflationary bad actors who are just going to raise their prices to whatever the government will pay, which, they can say it's free and we're going to help you fill out the government paperwork to get your entitlement money. And so it's really bringing this entitlement mindset that's the exact opposite. So one of the reasons I think homeschooling has been successful is, one, it aligns with God's design for humanity, and two, it's a self-sacrifice. Like, anything worth doing in this life requires sacrifice. Like, things that are hard, you are rewarded for because they are hard. And so making things easier doesn't always bring the same results back, right? You could go lift a 20-pound weight here on Earth or a 20-pound weight at the moon. It's going to do different things to your muscles. And so ultimately, it's not going to be about choice. It's about control. And you've got a lot of, kind of what they would call useful idiots. These might be smart people, but they don't understand the worldview that they're bringing into the kind of the homeschooling and Christian education space, and how ultimately it's going to be detrimental. And so you'll see, I think, ultimately over the next 5 or 10 years, the quality of homeschooling go down in areas that are subsidizing it, as well as just that entitlement mindset going a lot higher. So it's been kind of remarkable. So in Arizona, I was talking to a mom she's not taking the money, so she's sacrificing like $60,000 a year of free money from the government by not taking it. And she was talking to one of the people administrating the program, and she said that just kind of the entitlement of those people taking school choice has flabbergasted her, that it's like more than those who are on like housing vouchers or welfare, you know, food stamps and SNAP, because those people are trying to get off and know that it's maybe, you know, most of them people are trying to get off and they know it's a temporary help from the government, versus these school choice participants feel like it's entitled. And I was actually talking to a pastor today, trying to convince him to, they have a school on their campus that's taking the money. And I was talking to him about it. And he was saying, yeah, the parents who are taking the money, they are just the most entitled people I've ever spoken to. And he's like, what's going on with that? And I was like, well, it's an entitlement program. So, of course, they're going to feel entitled. And since the government's paying for it, they don't have that buy-in that your customers used to have. And so they expect you to provide a service for them. And if you're not doing it up to their level, they're just going to take their money somewhere else. And so, you know, after talking to him for about an hour, you know, he was very convinced that he needs to figure out a way to, you know, provide a stability for their school without taking the money. So
they can keep things moving forward for people that need help. They have help and it doesn't come from the government.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying is like, as a Christian, like I'm called to help my neighbors. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I'm not called to help my neighbors after the government's helped them. I'm called to help them beforehand. And so, you know, not trying to debate all these entitlement programs today, other than, you know, every single entitlement program in history has tended not to actually benefit anyone other than the rent seekers and the crony capitalists. So, you know, these are big pass-through programs. I know the Texas just passed the program and they gave I believe $1 billion no bid contract to one of the governor's donors to administer their program. So ultimately what the Republicans seem to be doing with these programs is they're trying to hurt the teachers unions and reallocate money that the teachers unions are getting and putting it into their donors' pockets so that they can provide them funding for the next election cycle. So that's ultimately the sinister beast, belly of the beast on these school choice programs. It's not about helping kids. It's about redistribution of wealth to the donor class.
Yeah, and the family that is, like you said, really wanting to sacrifice so they can maintain their freedom, they're the ones that get the short end of the stick. Because when these groups do get the money and launch into these programs that then elevate the prices for everybody, it affects the moms and dads that are trying to pay out of pocket, because now their prices are way higher.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at like Obamacare and Affordable Health Care Act as a great example, right? I mean, people will say, well, just don't take the money. You know, you don't have to take the money. Well, if suddenly all the providers are now have increased their price to exactly to the penny what the, you know, subsidy is, well, it makes it very difficult for mom and dad who are already sacrificing to now, you know, pay those exorbitant fees. So, I mean, I hope at Classical Conversations, we aren't doing that. So, you know, our leaders, the people leading our local communities, you know, those are Christian leaders. And so you can't be a Christian leader and on welfare. In my book, I was, again, talking to a pastor, as a, you know, the Bible says to be an elder, you have to be at you have to take care of your family. So like if you had an elder that was on, was in government housing and on SNAP food stamps, like, is that person qualified to be a Christian leader? And this pastor said no. And in fact, I had one that was like that early on. And I told him he either had to get off the welfare or, you know, resign from our board. And so he chose to resign instead of provide for his family. And I said, okay, well, now let's just go do school choice. You know, if someone's on this educational welfare, are they qualified to be a leader? And that's just something for you to think about.
Yeah.
And so for us, we said no. So we don't know where people's money come from, but we won't take a check from the government for our curriculum. And and you can't be in leadership if you're taking the money, but you could be a customer of ours just because, you know, we don't know where that comes from. But if you are going to be a leader, part of the agreement is to do that. So that's honestly like where it's kind of been hurting us the most, where you know, people trying to find leaders in these states that, you know, you went from maybe 11 or 12% of the population in the state and 100% of homeschoolers paying their own bills to, you know, now probably less than 1%, if even that many, are paying their own educational money. So it's just bringing this entitlement.
That's a huge change. Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, if you don't want universal basic income, single-payer housing, single-payer health care, you should fight against single-payer educational.
Yeah.
Because once that gets in there, I mean, the defenses are down. The camel's nose is in the tent.
Yeah, and the Christian curriculum, like CC or others that are sticking to their guns and saying, no, we're going to put Christ first, those will eventually be drowned and squeezed out of existence because there won't be anyone left to buy. It's really kind of sad to see the, like you're saying, all these people that are so excited about getting that, and they're entitled. They feel like they're owed it.
Right.
Seems like there's people that are saying that it's theirs because they paid enough taxes, but that doesn't seem like those numbers add up either.
No, they don't add up. And so you might get a 12-year reprieve, but you're going to be paying a lot more taxes the rest of your life. And, you know, is it possible that there would be a school choice program that let you keep your own money? I mean, possibly. There hasn't been one up to date. I haven't seen any particular one that I thought was written in a way that honors God's design for the family. So, I mean, like for us, because we do business in so many states, I pay taxes in 32 states. I mean, my tax return's like that big. I mean, if anyone should be entitled to tax breaks, it's me, right? I did the math, and if you look at like the average price that they pay to public schools and the number of people that have been in classical conversations, we've saved the state and federal government about $18 billion over the last 15 years. So, you know, it's, and I've been paying plenty of taxes in the meantime. I appreciate the perspective, but in Luke 6, it says if they steal from you, don't ask for it back. When Jesus gave us the, second mile illustration, if a soldier makes you carry his stuff for a mile, what should we do? I mean, that was a form of taxation of your time and resources. And Jesus said, walk a second mile. And so, for us as Christians, we're supposed to be demonstrating the way. Like they used to call Christians followers of the way. And that's because our way is way different than the world's way. And so trying to do things the world way, it's going to be disastrous for Christian education in the long run. And it already has been disastrous internationally. There's other countries that have had these school choice programs in for decades. They are no longer electing, conservative governments. They're, gone full bore socialism and are experiencing all the fruits of that. And it's not surprising because every single kid in their country was educated through a socialist system. And so just as, I know most people haven't thought about these school choice programs as deeply as I have, so I'm not necessarily judging anyone at the moment. I'm just trying to warn you. Eventually, the voice in the wilderness is crying out and no one's listening. Yeah, thank you, Nathan. And yeah, if you guys want to follow me on X, I'm the Robert B. Show on X. And of course, go to classicalconversations.com, put in your zip code, and we'll connect you to a local homeschooling parent that would love to tell you about our program.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you again next time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Frontline with FPM. For more information about the topics we discuss here, check out Family Protection Ministries at fpmca.org and subscribe to our channel.